done what I could. I bought us some time. Now I'm turning things back over to you. How are we going to spend our final invaluable moments? Winslade's mouth compressed into a tight line. He was a smart boy, and he got my message loud and clear.
You're right. There's no time for recriminations. That will come later, if we're lucky enough not to be permed in this hole. As it happens, I have Natasha working on a solution.
Turning, I took a look at the girl. It was true. She seemed intent on something technical. I recalled that when I'd first returned with the Rigelian, Winslade had been hassling her about something. What's she working on? I asked.
The jump gate.
I shook my head. That won't work. Nostrum was destroyed.
I know that, you cretin. I'm talking about redirecting it. If we can connect directly to Earth...
I brightened suddenly, catching on. We can step through and reach home in minutes, I exclaimed. I didn't know such a thing was possible.
Normally it isn't. She's trying to hack it.
Leaving Winslade to pace a circle in the dirt on the cave floor, I walked over to check on Natasha.
Not now, James, she said immediately, showing me the palm of her hand. I need to focus.
What's wrong?
I think I've got it working, but every time I send a buzzer through, it doesn't return.
Huh, I said, eyeing the pink-gray haze doubtfully. So, you've got no idea if it really works or not?
None.
Before, when you sent buzzers through to Nostrum...
Yes, I know, but this situation is different. The buzzers aren't trying to deliver a message. They're just stepping through and coming back, that's all.
I said, thinking over the problem. At last, I heaved a sigh. How many buzzers do you have left?
3. I'm sending another in about a minute, after making what I hope are improvements to the software.
All right, I'll watch. She released a tiny metal crawling drone. It quickly scuttled into the field and vanished. Rocking back on her knees, she sighed and waited. A minute passed, but nothing happened. Where to go?
I don't know. It could be that the jump gate I've sent the buzzer to is still attached to a third location. Therefore, if the bug goes through and comes back, it won't return here. It will show up somewhere else.
I don't get it. She sighed.
What I'm trying to say is there are 3 gates. 2 of them connect to each other. But I've added a third one that only connects to 1 of the 2. A computer scientist would call it a direct graph made up of 3 nodes and pointers, but in this case one of the nodes is unreachable. Our node.
I said. If anything, I was more confused than before. Okay, I guess it could be that, but it could also be that something is destroying these drones the second they go through, right?
Yes, that's possible. It could be that this gate teleports the drone somewhere I have no control over. The interior of a star, for example, or the bottom of an ocean trench.
I thought about that for a few seconds. How much dirt is between us and the top of this mound? I asked, studying the ceiling doubtfully.
2, maybe 3 kilometers, uphill every step.
My math wasn't stellar, but I figured we'd take hours to reach the surface. I didn't think we had that kind of time. Send me next, I said, instead of one of your last buzzers. Natasha turned to me.
Trying to earn your title, hero?
Nah, I figure I've already got that locked up. But the buzzers just aren't working. You can't go because you're the only one who has a chance to fix things if this escape hatch isn't working right. On the other hand, I'm pretty much useless at this point.
Not so,
she said, but she smiled.
All right. Step through. But I'm not going to watch.
Give me a kiss first. She looked startled, then guarded. I stepped closer, then grinned. Come on, for luck. I'm about to perm myself to prove your haywire setup doesn't work. Standing up, Natasha leaned close to peck at my cheek. I encircled her with my long arms and gave her a nice kiss. After a moment of resistance, she relaxed and went with it. We'd had some fine moments in the past. Thanks, I said. I feel better about this already.
And I feel worse. Come back safe, all right?
I'll be fine. I can just feel it. I lied. Don't worry for a second. Stepping close to the jump gate, I hesitated for a last look around. Could this be my final moment as a whole and breathing man? Deciding it was best not to think about it too much, I squinched up my eyes and stepped into the field. A whispery sensation traveled over my body and I vanished. When I opened my eyes again, I saw to my delight that I was on Earth. My face split into a wide grin. Nothing looks better than your home planet, especially when you contrast it with an alien hive full of death and dirt. The next thing I noticed were the heavy troopers. They were Blood World types, standing in formation. A squid officer was haranguing them and gesturing with his tentacles. I got the feeling they didn't want to step into the jump gate. "Hey there," I called out. "What's wrong?" The squid turned and I cocked my head. He had a red crest, the emblem of a centurion. "Is that you, Sub-Centurion Bubbles?" I asked.
"That is an approximation of my name,"
he said, rolling forward with that strange multi-legged gait the cephalopods used on land.
"I see your identification patch. You are the McGill?"
"That's right. I'm back home again. We've been sending buzzers through this gateway to test it. Have you seen any of them?" The squid shook himself. That was the squid way of shaking their heads. I suppose it was as close as you could get when you didn't have a neck. "That's strange," I said. "Since I came through cleanly." Looking around, I thought I saw a silvery glint in the grass. I bent down and picked it up. Sure enough, it was a busted buzzer. I showed it to Bubbles. "Someone had stomped on it by the look of it." Bubbles examined it briefly, then flew into an unexpected rage. He approached the nearest knot of Blood Worlders and produced a long lash. "Hey, now," I said, but he wasn't listening. Cracking the whip and slashing with it, he demanded to know what had happened. The troops milled and grunted in pain. They were about as bright as circus bears, and right now, I was tired of seeing them get abused. When Bubbles again lifted his whip high to slash another trooper, I reached out and plucked it from his hand. He did an about-face and stared, eyes bulging and sides heaving from exertion. "Be careful, Squid," I told him. "You look like you're going to hyperventilate."
"You have shamed me in front of my underlings. What possible reason might you have for inflicting this humiliation?"
I thought about giving him some sort of speech on ethics, but quickly passed on the idea. It wouldn't have any kind of impact on one of his people. Instead, I decided to trump him at his own game. "You're wasting valuable time," I said. "If these Blood Worlders destroyed our buzzers, it's your fault, as you're the one in charge." He looked crushed to hear that. It was just the kind of thing a cephalopod overseer would have said. "I don't have time for your failures and petty vendettas," I yelled at him. "Legion Varus needs to escape Dark World using this gateway. They can't do it if they don't know it's safe."
"I have a solution,"
Bubbles said, yanking on the collar of the nearest Blood Worlder.
"I can tell this one is to blame. He does not meet my eyes. He will suffer in the place of the buzzer."
Before I could offer a better idea, Bubbles kicked and prodded the Blood Worlder into a shambling run. The poor dumb bastard stepped into the jump gate and vanished. We stood around for about a minute, but he didn't return.
"Odd," Bubbles said. "I expected him to report back."
"Well, you didn't tell him to. He's either confused or dead."
"Your logic is unassailable."
"You know," I said, "I couldn't help but notice that there's only one buzzer here. Natasha said she sent through at least 10 of them. What do you think happened to the rest?"
"Perhaps these oafs ate them,"
Bubbles suggested. He retrieved his whip and approached the line of littermates menacingly. I'd had about my fill of old Bubbles by this time. Coming to a decision, I snapped my fingers. "I've got it," I said. "You're going through next." This got the sub-centurion's full attention. He swung his eyes back to look at me.
"For what purpose?"
"When the general is unclear, it's his fault, not the soldier's. I didn't hear you tell that blood worlder what to do. In case he died already, it's not really fair to send another servant, is it?"
"It's definitely preferable,"
the cephalopod complained. "Nope. I'm in charge," I said. Human officers outranked all squid officers. That's why they had the sub in their ranks. "You sent that poor sap through, now I'm sending you. If you can get back to us, try to do so immediately. Understand your orders?"
"Yes, but..."
Stepping close, I grabbed a tentacle and gave a small shove toward the jump gate posts. He gave me such a glare in return, I thought maybe he would attack me. Cephalopods were our servants now, but they were incredibly powerful beings. They had muscles like a bundle of gorillas, and even one tentacle was a match for a strong man. Still, he was cowed. His people had been beaten by Earthmen fair and square. Also, I think my logic as to how to proceed managed to penetrate that rubber-skulled brain of his.
"I will go on this mission under duress," he said.
"You can dress however you want to. Just get in there pronto." With one last angry glower cast in my direction, he humped his way into the jump gate and vanished. Chapter 48. When the squid officer didn't return for 5 full minutes, I began to worry. Not about Bubbles, not really. He could take care of himself, or he could die as a charred pile of calamari for all I cared. But time was wasting, and this problem wasn't solving itself. There rose up within me a powerful, dark urge. I realized suddenly I could toss all this nonsense aside and just enjoy being back home. After all, just by reaching Earth, I'd done most of what needed doing. The others could be chalked down as dead, and if I had to, I could lie a little to make sure they all caught a revive. But that didn't sit well inside my mind. Natasha, Carlos, Cooper, even Winslade, they didn't really deserve to be tortured to death by Rigelians just because I'd played a prank on our dear hairless bear cub-looking friends. "Troops," I said to the milling soldiers. "Watch this gateway. If anyone comes through, find me and report what you saw." They looked from me to the gateway, then back again. I left them there, staring at my back and the gateway intermittently. The jump gate was set up at the top of a grassy hill near a barracks building. Striding quickly to Bubbles' office at the bottom of the hill, I found it unlocked. I pushed my way inside and began to rummage. He had a comm link, but that was passcoded. "Paranoid squid," I complained, cursing and throwing stuff around. I didn't find anything official I could use to contact Central, so I sighed and bit the bullet. Using my own tapper, I leaned way back in Bubbles' chair and called Drusus. Long before the call went through, I'd gotten up and abandoned the chair. It had a bad taint to it. Fishy. "McGill?" Drusus asked, incredulous. "Is that really you? How can you be so self-confident, so disrespectful of authority, so..." "Hold on, Preta," I said. "I'm all those things and more, and I'm sure I deserve a good, solid perming every other Sunday, but this is urgent, and it involves the safety of all Earth. Can I explain, sir?" Drusus closed his eyes for a second. He breathed through clenched teeth. "Did you miss out on some sleep last night, sir?" I asked. "You seem a bit out of sorts." His eyes snapped open again. "If I did, it was probably directly traceable to your actions." "Oh, now that's unfair, sir. Report, quickly."
In as snappy and concise a way as I could manage, I explained that the last of the Legion was buried on Darkworld, and Nostrum had been destroyed.
The ship? Lost?
Drusus asked. He stared, but he didn't seem to see me at all.
Two legions? Wiped out?
Whoever is left alive aboard the space complex, they can't hold out without Nostrum's help. That's about the size of it, sir, I said. On the bright side, we completed our mission by destroying the nest we landed on, and I managed to return with an artifact from the Rigellians themselves. I showed him the snake bone necklace thing. This serves them kind of like a tapper, I explained. Drusus had a sagging mouth. I had that effect on a lot of people. It even seemed to infect me now and then.
You had close, personal contact with one of the enemy?
Yes, sir, I said, unable to keep a hint of pride out of my voice. I was close enough to kiss him, not that I'd want to, mind you.
But how did you escape?
I said, thinking over my raft of lies and tricks. I gave my head a shake. Sir, that's complicated and interesting, but not critical right now. What I need is guidance and technical aid.
We haven't got anyone up there who can troubleshoot a gateway that doesn't work right, he said.
Florimel's team of scientists set it up and left months ago. It will take half an hour to get an air car up there from Central.
Okay, so technical help is out. What do we do? How can I save my legion?
Drusus took a deep breath.
In all likelihood, you can't, McGill.
I know that's a painful reality, but you've already sent through buzzers, a blood worlder, and a cephalopod officer. I think that's about enough proof, don't you?
My face fell. I'd really been hoping this would go differently.
What he was telling me was that my friends were as good as dead.
Unfortunately, he continued, we can't authorize revives for those who aren't confirmed to be dead. That means most of Legion Varus, I'm afraid.
What? I demanded in shock.
Yes. The Iron Eagles were aboard Nostrum, which your tapper feed, yes, I'm downloading it now, confirms as destroyed.
I looked down at my tapper. The damned thing was a snitch at times. I could see a red indicator of high traffic. Drusus was using some kind of override to dump my data. About then, I stopped listening to Drusus, although he went right on talking. The message was loud and clear. Anyone I'd not actually witnessed dying, or who wasn't in some way confirmed dead by my tapper, was as good as permed. Our ship had been lost. Our connection to Earth had been a one-way thing. But it hadn't saved us after all. Even if the rest of my cohort did chance it and walk through, there were plenty more lost in that anthill who couldn't prove they died to the satisfaction of Central. I tuned back in as Drusus seemed to be winding down. In short, we'll watch the jump gate. Possibly more survivors will straggle through. You've done well, as it turns out. These shots of the enemy fleet. Chilling, but very informative. I'm in your debt.
Well, then, I said, getting angry instead of depressed.
Help me get my legion out of purgatory.
It's not that simple. Maybe in time, Earth ships will venture to Darkworld again. Maybe if they find physical evidence, revivals can begin in future years. It's hard to say.
As he kept talking, I kept walking. Soon I was out on the hillside with the littermates, who were still staring at the jump gate as if they expected Santa Claus to step out of it.
Anything?
I asked them. They shook their heads in unison.
Shit.
McGill? Drusus said.
Where are you?
Outside, with the Blood Worlder, sir. I have them watching the gateway for escapees.
Anything?
Not yet, sir, I admitted.
Yes. Very unfortunate.
Legion Varus is a cursed outfit, truly. We always suffer the most. We shoulder the greatest burden, and still we...
That was as far as he got, or at least, as far as I listened. In the middle of his sentence, while the sun shined, the green grasses waved, and the littermates stared with baffled expressions, I stepped into the jump gate and vanished. Chapter 49. Tumbling through the light years, it seemed to me I had a chance to ponder, however briefly. There was simply no way I was going to leave the entirety of Legion Varus stranded on Darkworld. First off, I hated the place. It stank, sucked, and was essentially a giant dirt hole full of giant bugs. But why use the jump gate that had swallowed so many? One of my primary motivations for taking such a risk was the injustice of the situation. The Iron Eagles, Deech, Turov, oh sure, they were all going to catch a revive. But the actual grunts who marched into the anthill, those who'd fought and struggled to the last with a gruesome task beyond all measure, well, they were getting permed, or at least left on ice for possibly a decade or more. None of my friends were getting a revive until the brass back on Earth felt good and ready to investigate their tragic case. That wasn't good enough for me. I knew, as I stepped into the ether, that I might well be perming myself prematurely. It was quite possible this gateway went nowhere good. I had no way of knowing, but I decided to take the chance. When I stepped out on the far side, I felt disoriented. I was standing on a deck, but it was dark. When I say dark, I mean pitch black and ice cold. There was nothing to see and no one to share it with. "Is this Dark World?" I asked. "Am I underneath another anthill?" For some reason, my words elicited an unexpected response from the universe. A tentacle uncoiled and slammed into me, sending me spinning around. I crashed onto my face, and it was only by the grace of the Almighty himself I didn't crack my faceplate. "McGill?" asked a voice in the darkness. "Is that the McGill creature?" "Bubbles?" I asked. "Are you here assaulting a superior officer?"
I'm sorry, adjunct. My visual receptors have failed me."
"No problem. It's all right." I climbed to my feet and began searching the place. There were lots of things lying around, and the chamber was pressurized. Crawling on my hands and knees, I felt a few small, crunchy items. Lifting one up, I tried to use my suit lights to see it, but they didn't work. No form of light was working at all.
"The air is cold, but breathable,"
Bubble said.
"I've been here several minutes. I've taken what measurements I could."
"I think I found one of Natasha's buzzers," I said, daring to remove a gauntlet and touch the crinkled, spidery drone. "The weird thing is this darkness. My suit seems to be operating. It's pumping air and heat, but there's no light. Nothing."
"I can't detect anything with my visual orbs, either. The littermate in the corner seems to be similarly affected."
"There's a blood worlder in here?"
"Yes. You might recall that I sent him through first."
"Ah, right. Can you see anything, soldier?" The blood worlder was silent for a moment, but at last he spoke up. His voice was deep and kind of sounded like croaking. It was the voice you might expect a giant bullfrog to have if one of those amphibians could speak.
"No," he said simply.
His kind weren't conversationalists. "Well," I said, getting to my feet. I had my hands spread out, partly to balance and partly to ward off the unseen. "Looks like we have to move on. Maybe there's a way out of here."
"I don't think there is," Bubble said. "We've explored by touch, and in every direction, a border is soon reached. At that point, the deck becomes ragged and freezing cold. It's as if we're on an island in the middle of an icy void."
That gave me pause. I said, how's that possible?
The jump gate technology is far from perfect. Perhaps this is a random endpoint in space-time, a juncture or a seam in what we think of as reality. I once attended lectures on these advanced transportational technologies. They're reliable, as long as both ends are firmly tethered.
I thought about what Natasha had done. She'd untied one end of a jump gate and attached it to another one. Could she have done so in such a way that she created something new? Something that couldn't be easily escaped? Putting my gauntlet back on, I slammed the two of them together, making a loud popping sound. Well then, what are we going to do now?
That noise is irritating. Please don't repeat it.
I slammed my hands together again, harder this time. That noise?
Yes,
Bubbles said, his word dragging out into a hiss. Any ideas as to the future?
I asked. Eventually, I suppose,
Bubbles said in a philosophical tone.
Discipline will break down. At that point, we will consume one another. When that limited source of nourishment is exhausted, the survivor's existence will end.
I don't care much for your depressing prognostication, Squid.
And I don't care much for your derogatory references, human. Remember, Earth is far away. Our former relationship was one based upon...
His voice led me right to him. I'd already figured that if we were going to go down fighting, I might as well get in the first blow. My fist slammed into the sharp beak that was doing the talking. Squids kept their mouths underneath them, right about where a human's butthole might be. It was a sensitive spot, and I wanted to give him something to think about before I cut him into calamari slices with my combat knife. But suddenly, before I could stab Bubbles, a massive hand closed over mine. It was a hand so big, so dominating, it had to be the Blood Worlder. Stand down, soldier, I shouted.
No,
he said. Treachery, I shouted. You're giving him the fight. It was true. The squid had been momentarily stunned by my attack, but now he'd looped a few coiling tentacles around my midsection. He began to squeeze the way a python could only dream of.
Stop, the bullfrog voice of the littermate said. Look, the light.
Somehow, by the direction of his voice, I knew to look up. There, far above us, was a tiny pinprick of light, a white dot that was growing both in size and brilliance. We're saved, I shouted. Good thing you intervened, soldier. I was about to kill Bubbles. The powerful coils fell away from me. I could see Bubbles now, staring upward at the light. The Blood Worlder was similarly transfixed. Now no one should feel I'm a mean-spirited person, but it took all my strength of character not to stab them both right then, while they were distracted and I had the chance. Why? Don't ask. It's a Legion Varus thing, I guess. We're all kind of like junkyard dogs. If we encounter something we can't eat or hump, we feel a powerful urge to tear it apart. Just for spite.
Chapter 50. The light continued to grow. Soon we could see stuff again in our immediate vicinity. After about 4 minutes, the chamber we were in was fully lit. I measured the time passing on my tapper as that familiar reddish glow had returned to the organic diodes embedded in my forearm. Surprisingly, I realized I knew exactly where we were. This is the jump gate chamber on the space factory, I told my two fellow castaways. That circle of ice, that island of nothingness we were all trapped on, it's gone now.
The field has stabilized, Bubbles said. I suspect the transportation system enqueued us somehow, and it now has allowed the transmission to finish.
What?
Like any technological communications device, the jump gate must have a buffer.
Perhaps, when the system detected an error in transmission, it held up the final processing. Now, it seems to have decided to complete the task and release us.
Hmm, I said. You're saying the transmission system timed out?
It's my working hypothesis.
I'll have to ask Florimel about that sometime. But anyway, we're in a way station, the halfway point between Earth and Dark World. All the soldiers who came out here after we arrived walked through this chamber first.
Evidently. What do we do now, adjunct?
Bubbles asked. I noticed Bubbles was behaving himself once again. Neither he nor the Blood Worlder seemed overly upset by the fact we'd almost killed one another about 2 minutes ago. They didn't seem to get as rattled by such events as regular humans did. I pointed toward the second gateway, the one that was farther from us. That one goes to Dark World. Step through and tell Natasha and the rest they can use the gate to escape safely to Earth. Tell them they shouldn't delay or worry about me.
Bubbles looked at me quizzically. Not worry about you. This sounds as if you're not coming with us.
I'm not, I said. I've got a little work to do here on the station. I'll follow you soon enough. Time to get going, Sub-Centurion.
Bubbles looked disgruntled, but he beckoned to his only soldier. They stepped to the gateway and went through. I got the feeling he knew that was his only way out of this star system, and he wanted to get back to the safety of Earth. Otherwise, he might have argued. Looking around, I found the security stations and a lot of dead people. Apparently, after arriving with their fleet, the Rigelians had fried the space factory. Everyone I could find was stiff as a board. Radiation beams, that was my guess. The dosimeters that hung here and there were all in the red, which confirmed my suspicions. It made sense in a rude way. We were lice to them, and they just fumigated the entire space factory at once. The next step was a landing party to make sure none of the vermin, namely me, had survived. Accordingly, I moved to the security station with all the external smart cameras. This spot had served as our command outpost. In fact, the place was still crowded by the dead. Pushing aside stunned-looking, burnt-eyed legionnaires, I found that some of the electronics still worked. I saw enemy troops crawling on the hull. They weren't Vulbites, but a veritable army of bipedal creatures. Could they all be bear cubs from Rigel? Maybe. It was hard to tell in those suits. There wasn't any point in fighting with them, as they'd won the day. I wanted to kill a few, naturally, but I knew I wouldn't be able to take many out before getting whacked myself. A thought did come to me, however, as I bounced through the passageways back toward the way station. When I reached the chamber with the jump gate, I stared at it and paused. I could walk into it, head down to Dark World, then step through the gate down there and be back on Earth. That was the rational thing to do. But my monstrous idea gripped my mind. There should be just enough time, just barely. Gripped by a thought that would have alarmed anyone else who'd conceived it, I ran from the way station and headed back downward, going deeper into the structure. Running in half-G is kind of tricky. You tend to bounce like a jackrabbit. Unfortunately, the ceiling wasn't more than 3 meters high, so I kept scraping it and taking too long to land and get another bound going. To compensate, I used my hands to pull me along, flinging myself like an ape crossing a jungle gym. I also bent my head low. Using these techniques, I got myself moving at a pretty good clip, probably around 30 kilometers an hour. At that speed, I could crack my helmet if I hit a bulkhead. Once I was into the rhythm of it, I traveled fast. At each junction, I took the one that went downward, deeper and deeper into the guts of the factory. I'd only been down here once, back when we'd been searching for a strange, crying voice in the depths of the vast, deserted structure. At last, I found the power generator. The squat alien contraption flashed and spun. It was a sight to behold. spinning but not actually moving, a ball of light whirled around on a spindle of silvery diamond. That ball of energy shot off jolts of electrical power every second or so, like miniature bolts of lightning. A coiled metallic framework around it caught the bolts. It looked to me like a lightning storm trapped inside a silver cage. The last time I'd been down here, Natasha had told me that the power generator, and particularly the containment field that kept it from going wild, was inherently unstable. She hadn't understood how the Rigelians had managed to keep it from going berserk, and she'd been impressed with the technology. She'd wanted to study it, but we'd never gotten the time. Looking at the tech marvel, my desire was somewhat different, since it was soon to be captured by an enemy who'd managed to wipe out two Earth legions. Well, I wanted to break it. I guess I'm a true Varus man in the end, through and through. I started off by poking at it. I almost fried my ass off right there. Only the wisdom of the moment kept me from sticking a tool I'd found, something like a screwdriver attached to a pair of tree pruners, into the field inside the cage. Instead, I tapped the base of the unit, just to see what would happen. A flash went off, and I was left holding a burnt stump. Fortunately, both my gauntlets and the handle on the tool had been heavily insulated. Still, there were black streaks all up my arm to the elbow. "Wow," I said, dropping the burning stump of a tool. "This thing is dangerous." Circling the machine, I tried to think of a way to disable it. Nothing came easily to mind. It was about then I got a warning tone from my tapper. I looked down and I knew what I was seeing. I'd tapped into the security systems, and they were trying to warn me. Tuning into the security cameras, I swiped through a dozen of them. At last, I saw what I was looking for. The enemy had breached the outer hull. They were pouring into the complex from all over, swarming the upper decks. They weren't taking anything for granted, either. They were moving fast, with their weapons held at the ready. They were acting like they were ready for resistance. I felt a sinking feeling as I watched one group get to the security center and keep going. The camera system was fairly smart, and it followed the group's progress as they rushed deeper and deeper. How could they have tracked me? How did they know where I'd gone? "Shit," I said, knowing in my heart I was doomed. I wouldn't be going back to the way station and stepping out. I wouldn't be sneaking off this pile of burnt steel in any other nefarious fashion either. They knew right where I was, and they were making a beeline for this spot. It didn't matter how they'd done it. Maybe my suit was leaking RF. Maybe they had spy drones aboard already, hunting for survivors. It hardly mattered, because I was thoroughly screwed. Knowing this, I felt somewhat freed. Once a man gives up on living, it can be a liberating moment. You can do all sorts of things that you wouldn't otherwise dare to contemplate. Guessing which door the Rigelians would come bursting through when they got here, I moved to the opposite side of the power generator. When they came through, at least they'd have to circle around to get a shot at me. Taking my only large piece of metal, my rifle, I tossed it on top of the silver cage that contained the power reaction. That did something. It caused some sparks and smoke. The rifle buzzed up there, but it didn't explode. After a few seconds, it kind of melted part way and slid off onto the deck. Cursing, I tried to pick it up, but it was a red-hot mess. I checked my tapper. Damn, if those boys weren't closing in on me. They'd moved to cover every exit, clearly knowing I was in here. They advanced from several directions, planning on opening all the hatches at once. Glancing at my ruined rifle, I was kinda sorry I'd wrecked it. There wasn't much time left. They wouldn't arrest me or listen to some bullshit story. They'd gun me down and ask questions later. Looking around the chamber in a panic, I didn't see anything else large and conductive. That had been my first instinct, to jam something into the cage and short it out. But maybe, just maybe, I'd been on the wrong track. I began looking for insulators rather than conductors. I found just what I needed. Big gloves. So big they would have fit a blood worlder. They were black and rubbery. Putting my hands inside, I was shocked to see they barely fit. That's when I figured out the gloves were made for an alien hand. Lifting them with my fingers rammed painfully inside, I flexed my hands. The big black gloves flexed with them, mimicking the motion. I knew what I had then, and I smiled. These were exoskeletal gloves. They enhanced the power of the user, making his hands work like those of a giant. Without further delay, I rammed all the gloves' big fat fingers into the cage and tried to spread them. It was hard, and I heard the gloves whine. After a minute, they started to smolder. The chamber filled with black smoke like a rubber fire. The trouble was my hands were strong, but not my arms. I had to spread my fingers on both hands in the same spot to tear open a hole in the cage. While I was doing this, the generator began to flash more brightly, in a rhythm. The light became so bright it hurt my retinas right through my squeezed tight eyelids. The white flashes were speeding up as I worked like an accelerating heartbeat. Finally, the hatches began to click and grind around me. I tried to lock them, but these people had probably built the place, so that hadn't held them up for long. I heard a hatch swing open slowly, creaking and groaning. This was it. Strange, excited clicking sounds told me they were Rigelians. They sounded just like the guy I'd bamboozled down on Dark World. Thinking of that, I smiled as I made my final play. There was only one more large metal object I had handy for shorting this generator out. That was my helmet. Unfortunately, my head was locked up inside it. But, oh well, everyone's body had to die at some point. I rammed my helmeted head into the hole I'd spread open in the containment cage, and I knew no more.
Chapter 51. When I caught a revive, I was even more surprised than usual. I'd kind of figured I'd permed myself that last go-around. Big questions swam into my new brain. Where had I been returned to life? How long had I been dead? They were serious questions. Sometimes people brought old James McGill back just to have a little fun with him before recycling his remains all over again.
"McGill,"
I said blearily when some guy asked my name.
"Rank?"
"James McGill. Adjunct, I mean."
"He's fuzzy, but he'll do. Take him upstairs."
Those were encouraging words for my new grown brain. If there were stairs here, that meant there was a building, which in turn indicated some level of civilization. Also, just on the face of it, being taken upstairs was almost always better than going downstairs. Prisoners tended to be dragged to underground dungeons. It made them easier to contain, and I guess it always had. As something of an authority on being arrested, tried, tortured, executed, and nearly permed on any number of occasions, I struggled to wake up and figure out my predicament. My mind sharpened with every halting step. I did my best to assess the situation. Two burly men with arms like gorillas were marching me down a long passageway and into an elevator. They'd given me clothing, but it was only an orange, papery jumpsuit. That was bad. If I'd been given a formal dress blues uniform, or at least a nice hot shower, that would have been a better omen. Nice clothes and comfort, that's how people greeted revived heroes. Jumpsuits and dragging? These things didn't indicate respect. So wherever I wasn't a hero. The elevator went up. And that's when I got my first hard look at my guards.
I said,
"Do I know you guys?" They didn't respond. They stared away from me at the elevator's digital floor readout. The weird thing wasn't their attitude, but their appearance. I could have sworn I'd seen someone like these two apes before. What was even freakier, as I looked at one and then the other, was the simple fact they were twins.
identical twins. Now, people might say I'm a dim bulb stuck in a lighthouse sometimes, but even after a sticky revive, I'm capable of logic thought. You two are clones, aren't you? I asked. There was no response from my captors. They didn't even look at me. The elevator door swished open. The floor counter displayed a green 9 on it, and there was only room for 2 digits on the readout. That meant this just couldn't be Central. Sure, what I'd seen of the place didn't look much like Central anyway, but I'd been kind of hoping I was back home. Dragged out of the elevator and marched along to a brighter series of offices, I became sure that I wasn't on Earth at all. There were windows, and whatever planet they were allowing me to look at, I knew it wasn't Earth. The landscape was kind of pretty. It had heavy plant growth, kind of jungle-like. Lots of floating things were in the air, too, hanging above the trees. They looked like jellyfish. When one of the drifting shapes outside twitched and began to undulate, I realized it was alive. I'll be damned, I said, gawking at the creatures. Flying jellyfish. A familiar voice laughed quietly behind me.
Same old McGill. You still have the mind of a child, don't you?
The two ape men turned around, and I faced Claver. That's when I realized who the two holding on to me looked like. They were Clavers, too. But they weren't the type I'd known for so many years. They were more like primitive relatives of Claver. In every way, they seemed dim-witted, inbred, and brutish, while Claver had always been small of body and quick of mind. I nodded my head toward my guards. Clones? I asked Claver. You made these warped clones of yourself?
Who else would I clone?
He asked, shrugging.
Welcome to my happy home, McGill.
I said, looking around again. What planet is this, anyway?
You sure you want to know? I'll have to erase you if I tell you.
Well, in that case, keep your secret. He gave me a dirty laugh. Walking over to the nearby window, he tapped on the glass. One of the floating jellyfish things startled and humped away in the air.
Air jellies, Claver said. That's what I call them. Unless I'm in a bad mood, then I just call them farting gas bags. They use air like ballast, sucking it up and farting it out to stay at a given altitude.
How can they fly at all?
A combination of things. For one, we're in low G here.
Now that I thought about it, the world did seem a little bouncy. I might have paid more attention to that if I hadn't just come from the space factory where gravity was even less of an issue.
Second, Claver continued, the atmosphere here is kind of thick. Not as thick as water, mind you, and just barely breathable. But it is thick. I think that helps them stay drifting around on the air currents.
I see. I'm truly marveling at your home, Claver. But now, if I might ask a question.
Why'd I bring you back to life? Why are you here at all?
Yeah. That's kind of what I was wondering. Claver turned to look out at his air jellies again.
McGill, you're a black blight upon my existence. Did you know that? That's right. I said a blight. A disease. A thing of less than no value. A thing that brings only pain and disillusion.
This wasn't going the way I'd hoped, so I reached for a distraction. What about the bio who birthed me just now? I asked. Was he a Claver, too?
Naturally, but a smarter one, a class 2.
Class 2? You rate yourselves?
We have to. There's no other way for a group fudged up from a single DNA strand to cooperate.
If he's class 2, what are these apes?
Class 3. Loyal workers. The best part of me in human form.
Hmm. And you?
I'm the type of Claver who you've always dealt with. A prime. Class one.
There's nothing better, huh?
He scowled and crossed his arms.
For all intents and purposes, I'm the real Claver. The original. Most of the time, there's only one or two of me in existence.
I blinked at him, absorbing these new concepts and trying to make use of them. At last, I grinned. You made these guys big, dumb, and servile on purpose, didn't you? I asked, jerking a thumb toward the face of the one on my left.
That's right. I guess I modeled them after you.
They don't ever talk back?
I asked.
Turning to the one on my left, I cocked my head. Why does that little old man over there get to give you orders? You're bigger than him, you know. Why don't you give him orders? The ape didn't respond, but the smarter Claver laughed again.
Sowing discord, huh, McGill? Nice try. But these guys will be pretty darn tough to turn. They're genetically predisposed toward loyalty and service. They believe in their job as strong-arm guards, just as utterly as you believe in the defense of Earth.
I turned back to the boss, Claver, and squinted at him. Are there any girl Clavers? I asked. And if there are you sick enough to sleep with them?
Claver scowled at me. Of course not, you disgusting mudslinger.
You know, I said, struck by a thought, I think I found one of your female versions back on the space complex. She was dead, but her ripped-out tapper was still transmitting. A human down there. We couldn't figure out who it could be. But now...
Shut up, McGill,
Claver said, taking a menacing step closer.
Why do you have to make it so damned hard to keep myself from killing you? I'd like to perm you 6 times over already, just for what you did back on Dark World. But here you go, trying to make things even worse.
How about you introduce me to one of your lady friends? I asked. I know you've got to have some stashed here somewhere. No one could play God like this without... He signaled my guard somehow. They'd been motionless up until now, holding on to me like the metal arms of a crash seat. But suddenly an explosion of pain hit me in the gut. I retched and tried to curl up. But I couldn't.
Maybe you should try a different line of inquiry,
Claver suggested.
Don't you want to know what happened back on Dark World? What do you remember exactly?
After a choking, coughing fit subsided, I went along with his suggestion. I wasn't with my suit, I said. I only remember arriving on the space factory and finding everyone dead.
That's it?
Claver demanded. He squinted at me. And I let my face go slack. My dumbass, clueless expression seemed to convince him. It was believable enough that I didn't remember the details of my death.
You wrecked the place,
he said, sighing. Wrecked the planet?
Not entirely, but you gave it your best shot. You wrecked the space factory. One of the big power generators blew.
You sure that was me? He blew out a disgusted snort.
Who else? But there is proof. According to a recorded vid stream from the Rigelians, they found you trying to destabilize the field right before it happened.
I said. So, there was a power loss? So what? The power's dead and the place is drifting, is that it?
I wish. It was far, far worse than that. A dead power generator? Ha, no biggie. But what you did brought the whole thing down.
Seriously?
Yes. That generator maintained one of several critical fields that held the massive structure in a stable orbit. It took about 2 weeks to fall, and the Rigelians worked around the clock to save it, but they couldn't do it. The whole damned thing collapsed eventually, crashing into the Volbite's sorry excuse for an ocean.
I stared at him for a moment, honestly dumbfounded. Then, after that pregnant pause, I guffawed with laughter. I raised my knee and slapped my hand down on it, earning a grunt and a tightening of his grip from the Claver ape on my right side. That would have been a great sight to see, I boomed, smiling and shaking my head. Too bad I missed it.
Yeah, Claver said, eyeing me with discontent. Do you know what a factory that size consumes in raw materials? Vast quantities of metals, gases, and radioactives. The shipping contracts alone would have been a big source of wealth for me for decades.
That's what you were interested in? Merchant rights to the factory? Makes sense, I suppose. You probably didn't care who won the factory, did you?
Of course not, he snapped. That's why I kept out of this one. I figured I couldn't lose. Either way, no matter who owned it and wanted to build starships, they'd need a supply network.
Oh, I said, getting the picture. I was thinking differently. I figured if Earth couldn't own it, the Rigelians shouldn't have it either. Claver snapped his fingers and pointed at me. His hand shook a little.
That's it, right there. The insanity of James Friggin' McGill. I didn't figure on that. But I should have.
I shrugged, not caring what he thought. Standard soldier protocol, I said. If you can't use an asset, at least deny it to the enemy. Scorched earth.
You know what, McGill? This whole thing was a mistake. I thought I could talk to you. I know you have connections, and I thought I could make use of them. But no, all you can do is make jokes. I'm afraid I'm going to have to snuff you out and let someone else revive you, if they care to.
This statement had me honestly concerned. I died under very unusual circumstances. The Legion Varus people who'd been on Dark World had probably fled by the time I wrecked the factory and died. I might very well have been the only human being in the star system by that point, so who would be able to verify I was dead? Without a corpse, galactic law forbade a revival for anyone. The reason for that simple wisdom was on display right in front of me. Claver had built an army of himself on some planet tucked away in the middle of nowhere. I'd long suspected he had a lair like this one. It explained how he was able to pop up and vanish at will, because he wasn't just one person. He was more like an army of cockroaches, living in a swarm under your house and only sending scouts to venture forth into the light of day now and again. Hold on, I said.
Aha, he laughed. Now you're nervous? Not the almighty McGill. He fears nothing, especially not his long overdue perming.
Hold on. I know stuff.
You don't know shit from a hole in the ground, boy.
Yes, I do. I've got the book.
There was a long silence after that. Claver studied me, and I studied him.
What book?
He asked at last. Don't play the idiot with me, old Silver, I said. You know the book I'm talking about. The Eaters of the Lotus.
He blinked. Once, then twice.
You don't have it, he said. I would have heard by now. You're bullshitting in order to keep breathing for one more precious minute. Sorry, boy, but your luck has run out.
He signaled the two muscle-bound Clavers, who promptly turned me around and began hustling me back toward the elevator. I had the distinct feeling that if I rode that elevator down into the dungeon under this 9-story building, the odds were slim I'd ever awaken again.
Wait, I said. Do you know a lizard named Rosh?
Hold on, Claver said.
The twins halted, and I tried not to sweat. Claver slowly walked up behind me and the two apes.
What do you know about Rosh?
He asked. I smiled. Of course. It made too much sense. Rosh, the Saurian who had invaded Florimel's apartment and gotten himself killed, had been working for Claver. I know he was looking for the book, I said. He found I had it, so I had to put him down. Klaver hissed at my back.
You killed Rosh.
Yep, damn. He wasn't backed up. You permed a good agent.